No.
Way has finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Whale of All Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Red Powell.
Hello.
Red, welcome back.
Yeah. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Adam Camilleri.
Yay. Hello.
And Tanya Gates.
Yay. Hi everybody.
Thank y'all for listening. Thanks for inviting us into your ears this week. And every week, please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. At least hit the subscribe button if this is something, you know, 40K is your jam. We're going to be talking about Warhammer 40,000. But this episode is going to be a little bit different. It's a very special episode where we talk about the consequences of your actions.
Oh, no. I don't like any of
this. Well, okay. I made that sound a little bit more drastic than it probably is. But we're going to
talk
about...
No, I think it was fair. It was fair.
You know, a couple episodes ago, we started talking about like how if you were planning a tournament or an event or something, whatever your terminology is, and you wanted to influence certain things at your event, what are you potentially limiting or encouraging that maybe you don't anticipate? We also encourage people to document their what they want to see, you know, create it like a little packet or a blurb or some type of literature on what people can expect from your events and what you expect from people, you know, such as what the terrain is going to be like, what the rules in the terrain are going to be, how the area terrain is going to be handled, the time, you know, publish lunch. And I'd also like to put it out there in the universe that even though that you do go through the effort of publishing that, only some percentage of the people are actually going to read it.
I had a mate suggest that because this was a Heresy event, but we ran it with a projector screen. You know, it was just running, you know, sweet metal music and various Heresy maps and widgets and stuff. And we suggested we should take the projector idea and just have the plays pack up during the event. And then when somebody asks a question, you just flick to that page and tell them to read it.
This doesn't have to be anything too complex. I mean, we're talking about like not a novella here. It could just be just as simple as publish when the start, lunch, and end dates, and then the awards you're going to give, you know, or what you're going to rank or how you're going to score the event. Mm.
It's also a big thing to talk about when there's consequences of your actions. I mean, there's a lot of non-event specific things like, you know, how you conduct yourself at clubs, how you hold yourself when you're playing casual games, or just like how you hold yourself talking around a painting table. There's many different microcosms of this.
Yeah, so I wanted to kind of dive a little bit deeper into what that meant. So if you were to say that everything, you know, everyone had to be battle ready, I'm talking about the paint and hobby equivalent of what they consider or what is becoming considered battle ready. You know, if you hold to that standard, you know, is there anyone in your immediate play group or store group that you would be excluding? And are you really making a conscious decision to do that?
So it's interesting to know that this that kind of restriction affects different groups in different ways. I know here I like it a lot more in Australia because it's so expensive and hard to get models that just by putting that restriction in, you actually restrict some of the armies that can come. Like let's say AdMech came out, yeah, and then 2 weeks after AdMech, the AdMech book is allowed, but it has to be battle ready. And so no one's going to have their going from their 15 Skitarii veterans and Vanguard and Rangers to the 45, 90 they want to run with. And so you actually can kind of control the fluctuations of the meta just by things like that at certain times. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It does really change the parameters of who and what can attend. I would like to note that there's for some of the friends that I have who are not the most prolific painters, we have a couple of events every year that people see as the keystone events, so they want to have a new army for XYZ event. And one of the big ones over here is an event called ARC, where it's usually a smaller event, usually somewhere between 1,200 and 1,750 or 1,850 is the amount of points, so it's really rarely 2,000 points. And people want to have a new army, and they want to start the year by making a new army for that one. And so it's cool to time your events to coincide with those ones. Like you have a 1,000 point event, you know, a month or 2 months before that one, and people can have that as their stepping stone. Oh, cool! I can try and get 1,000 points for this event, then get to that next 1,500, so 500 over for the next one, etc., etc. But at the same time, if you try and do an 1,800, a 2,000 point one after that, you might just have people just who've just blown out trying to get to that one, and then they just come with, or they don't come because they can't get that next hurdle. I find the meta crafting by like rubric an interesting one.
Well, so I guess what my point, or at least my what I'm throwing out there is like really think about it before deliberate. Like you, I think battle ready is really a good standard to work for, especially, you know, in a community, even if it is a one that's just starting out, it's something that you can strive for, even if you don't have, let's say you don't get the number, the volume of folks that you wanted to on your initial outing. If you hold to your standards, you might get, you know, what you were expecting on the next one. And, you know, and if you were to feel like you needed to end up compromising, let's say, you know, you want to hold an event for 20 folks, you put the, I'm using battle ready as just an example, but it could be anything or any set of criteria. I almost said standards, and I want to, and I'm intentionally avoiding that because I think we're more talking about just the criteria of this type of thing. Is once you put that any kind of criteria out there, you'll get folks that inevitably say, yo, I can't meet that. Can I come anyway? And then you kind of run into a situation of, you know, maybe you want to allow that because they've got a sincere reason why they can't. Mm. They're brand new. It's their only weekend they can get out in the next 6 months or so. And they've appealed to your sensibilities. Yeah. And you want them to be there.
Well, so what do you do in that situation? Like if you put in that spot, like, because you, it really depends how you're coming at this as a tournament organizer or a tournament as a community member. I mean, I'd be okay. It wouldn't bother me. Maybe say to such an extent to say, okay, well, if you want to come and you don't want to adhere to the rubric, the battle ready stuff, unfortunately, you'll be ineligible for prize support. You'll be ineligible to, you know, if you come first, you know, the next guy below you will be getting the trophy and the prize, so to speak.
That's one way to do it. That's actually a very interesting way, I think, of approaching it.
Yeah, if you're still happy to attend under those terms, by all means. Because at some level, like a tournament organizer, it's not a business, but at the same time, you have to want to feel like you're getting a reward for effort. And saying no to somebody who wants to attend your business, like, you know, your event, is kind of just, it hurts you. It hurts you to say no to people who are enthusiastic about something you're passionate about.
Yeah, especially when you want, you know, you're really trying to be entertaining, right? I think there is a point where you do want to please the masses and you want everyone to love it, and everyone love your brand and your style that you're putting out there. But you also want to run something that's important to you and that you would enjoy. I think most people set out to make things that they would also enjoy attending. It's like a game master in a D&D game. Well, it's like you just run the kind of campaign that you want to play in.
Question for our definitions panel, or our morality panel, because Lord knows I don't qualify. what's the line between something like that and gatekeeping? Where's the distinction for people? Because I know a lot of people like to throw these words around sometimes correctly, incorrectly, or indifferent. Where is the line red, Tanya? Where is the line between saying, you know, enforcing a rule, a player's pack, and then gatekeeping a scene or an event?
Mm-hmm. For me, gatekeeping, it's not so much being like this is the expectations to attend this event. Gatekeeping is more like, these are the expectations to attend this event, and no other way is acceptable for you to enjoy your hobby.
Mm.
If that makes sense, right? Yeah. So like it's, you're not, by having expectations for an event, you're not saying it's my way or the highway. Like, you're not saying that they don't belong in the hobby. You're just saying, like, you know, maybe if they don't like these standards, maybe it's not the event for them.
That's it. You actually are. I think you hit the nail on the head right there, is that you're setting, you know, if you are taking on, and I really do think that all of this is with the organizers to do themselves. Like, they are, you know, you've heard me say this now for years or whatever, is they're taking on all the risk. You know, a lot of the organization, they're sometimes not playing. Although I think that nowadays, with this heavily documented rule set that we have, it's more acceptable for like the organizer to play in their event. You know, maybe they don't award themselves best painted kind of thing, but you know, they can at least participate in some cases. But that's not, you know, that's another thing to consider as a toggle within your community. And before we get too deep into that, I want to mention, like, I think that what you suggested, Adam, for maybe removing people that don't meet all the criteria, for removing them from certain award categories or potential for certain award categories is great. But the other side of it is if you allow folks in that don't meet the criteria where someone else had basically struggled mm-hmm. or labored to meet that criteria, you run the risk of potentially Absolutely. Alienating them.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. In fact, I think we even had somebody in the comments of the last Culture Crafting episode saying specifically that if you create a rubric, if you create a set of, what, and I don't want to say standards, but if you create a set of expectations for your customers, playing group, whatever it may be, it's important that it is kind of important that you stick to it. But like the example I gave, that could easily be written into your players pack if you wanted to ride that line between the two. Like you didn't want to exclude anybody, but at the same time you wanted to reward those who put in the effort, who meet the minimum requirements.
Communicate it too. Like as soon as, let's say that someone comes and says they tug on your heartstrings and they want their unpainted wog to get in there, and you allow it, which is, you know, if we're talking about battle ready as a criteria, as an example, it could be anything, you know. If you want it to be 100% Games Workshop models and someone is not 100% Games Workshop models, if you want it, they want to allow a certain kit bash and you had previously not, you know, said you weren't going to allow because there's a line between kit bashing and proxying, you know, we can go deep and into specifics here. But where I'm going is that you do allow someone to extend their criteria or be outright on the fringe of it. I think you need to communicate that as soon as you do to make sure that everyone that wants to participate knows maybe where the new line is.
Yeah, spot on. Yeah, I'm trying to come at a question for Red. If he's present.
Oh, I'm present. I'm just still trying to catch up. You guys have accomplished so much while I was gone. I'm still reeling at all that I need to still catch up on.
Well, I've got a specific question for you, if I'm able.
You're able. I assure you.
And please tell me if this crosses a line or goes into terms of territory you don't want to discuss. But there's a phenomenal amount of culture crafting that goes into a huge and as dense an organization as the U.S. military. Are you able to give us some examples of how the culture is crafted there? I mean, to a lot of extent, there's been a huge shift, even in my lifetime. I mean, I grew up watching movies like Apocalypse Now and, you know, Full Metal Jacket and things of this ilk. I'm gonna try and start digging up soon, but we'll see. But there's a certain level of perception that comes with these things, and I think in my lifetime I've even seen that shift. And I'm speaking of the same as my perception of the own military of my nation of Australia, where I had this growing up, I had this very meat-headed expectation of the thing, but the experiences I've had with the individuals involved have been nothing but the opposite, nothing but class and gentlemanly behavior pretty much across the board. How does, if you're able to give me some examples, how does an organization as huge and as vast as that get buy-in from the people involved and kind of craft such a standard? I don't know, I would say standard, but whatever. I've said enough. Go for it.
Sure. No, I mean, it is a huge undertaking, right? When you think about it, of what an organization's doing, when you talk about socialization, right? Everybody has a certain level of socialization in how you grow up, right? You're taught things by caregivers, parents, you know, different folks that sometimes it's a village, sometimes it's TV, right? That's directly plugging into how you're raised and whatnot. All sorts of aspects contribute to that. But then you go to something like the military, and I'll tie this into our wargaming culture, is that when you get introduced to that, there are people who have social experience, right? And those people, whether you want to call it criteria or standards, I think some of it is synonymous. And so in that regard, I'm not going to shy away from using the term standards, because I do think that different metas or different cultures, whether you want to call them microclimates or whatnot, they do have standards. They do have expectations. When groups of people get together and they spend time together over time, they develop standards amongst each other. And as new people come into it, you choose if you're going to hold people to that standard or if you're going to adapt to whatever differences. And so the military very much has that, where there are standards that people are held to as part of our profession. And so it supersedes the gaming environment in certain regards because of the professional nature of it and a lot of the other things that go into it, you know, taking into account the legitimacy of the profession and what goes into that and what we're entrusted with in our service. So that goes back to another thing, is that we all voluntarily step into that environment, wargaming culture or the military. And so with the military, you volunteer, you commit yourself to it, and you submit yourself to the standards. You acknowledge that there is a standard and you submit yourself to that. I would argue in a lot of cases of the game environment, you do something similar, not nearly as, and I don't mean to discourage anybody from the wargaming culture, but I won't say that joining the wargaming culture is the same as, you know, raising your hand and saying the oath and committing service to a country. But
I want to make a funny comment here, but I want to give no disrespect to
good guys. Keep good opportunities. We'll keep going. But with that, when you do that and you go into a wargaming culture and you're joining, it's just like anything else. There are people there that have experience amongst each other, and quite often they do in fact have standards. You see the folks that, you know, we talk about the old standard, right? The Goblin Green with the tufts of grass on the base.
The true
standard, right? Glossed, what was it? The finish was a shiny gloss, right? That's the old standard. And so as that has changed over time, I mean, we talk about what Battle Ready is now in 9th edition. And we look at going to large events. Great environment in Kentucky that I was at. The RTTs were much more relaxed in regards of the standards or the criteria to play. And painting wasn't required to certain extents, but it was encouraged. And there were hobby points, and there was a vote for best painted kind of deal. But at the same time, players weren't discouraged from coming just because of that. However, look at a GT level event, and there was a battle ready requirement or something like that. And so, the Slugga, right. And so it was meant to be something that was escalated and meant to help encourage the development of the group. And that's what I'm getting to, is that a lot of times there should be a purpose behind the criteria and the standards. And when we talk about our wargaming hobby here as a more comprehensive thing, and we talk about our finishing moves, we talk about different aspects to approach the hobby and what everybody enjoys in this game. And quite often it's different aspects are appreciated by others in certain regards more than others, right? And so you like to paint more, or you like to kit bash or what have you, or you just like to play. And so we can all appreciate that. But there's also some of these larger events, these more comprehensive events. It's understandable that they do have criteria or standards that are required of players as you come to show up, because you want to have this event. I mean, that's what I've really appreciated about some of the things that we've seen, different parts of our 40K culture, where people are encouraging others to step it up, to bring in better terrain, to approach the game from different angles and improve it in certain aspects for one another, because hosting better events for one another has become a point of accomplishment or pride, and in a good way. And I think that's really good, because as the culture has developed, we're developing amongst each other these expectations. Now, that can go too far, I think, in some cases, where the expectations may be unrealistic or unforgiving. And I don't think that it necessarily has to be that far. But I mean, we talk about the consequences of your actions, right? There have been some great events that have been run, and there have been others that have quite clearly been learning events for some, right? They've been educational moments in that, well, maybe I wasn't ready for this level of an event, and I tried to push something because I wanted to hit the criteria of a major or a GT, but I didn't have really the quality of terrain that might have been warranted for such an event according to the expectations and standards of the greater 40K community. Sometimes that's unfair, but I do think it is.
We've talked a lot about hobby, but I also want to mention in that same vein, you talk about having a structure that supports, you know, what you say you want. That could be also be something like a line of how rules decisions are handled,
Right.
You know, there could be anything that throws that out to where ultimately someone could leave your event and feel like you as an organizer did not do that great of a job, or you create this kind of weird environment that you were not intending.
Absolutely.
Now, we're talking about hobby because it's a very tangible thing. It's something we can look at and visualize, but this would be the same thing for how you handle sportsmanship things, how you handle dice down policy, how you handle rules disputes. You know, you factor this same level of dialogue or same thought process and thinking it through on each one of these decision points.
Well, and I know that was a lot to unpack, and I'm sorry for my meandering conversation, because there's a lot of this that I have been thinking about in the background. But Tanya, I'd like to, do you mind, what do you think of what I just said in regards to that, given that you're a newer player and you're engaging in more of these environments? Some of us have seen these over time and at quite a large breadth of experiences. So what do you think in that regard?
Well, I've only really been to three tournaments. One of them was like very, very small and had like zero hobby requirements whatsoever. So that one was kind of interesting because you could see that there was a lot of like new players there, myself included. And the feeling of it was like a lot different than the other two that I had been to. I mean, honestly, I feel like I just don't have the breadth of experience with which to like engage too far on this. Like I've been to three tournaments. I've never had to like call a judge over or anything like that. So I've not really had any experiences where I personally felt like maybe good. Excluded or anything like that. So yeah, I don't really Crazy. Have any opinions on that. I'm sure it'll happen at some point, but.
Well, let me interject here is that, you know, sometimes I've walked into a tournament or a situation and I've been able to recognize like, well, I am in a Lord of the Flies type situation or something like, I mean, I'm dramatizing it, of course, but you know what I mean? It's like, this is just need to play the games. I probably need to avoid calling a judge over, you know? Because, you know, I probably need to, you know, be tight with my FAQs and the rules, because, you know, there's either some loose interpretations around here or whatever, you know, it's like there's situations. It doesn't mean the event can't be fun, but, you know, I think we're talking about going back to the, you know, people may have bitten off more than they can chew or that maybe even the wrong way of doing it. Maybe they were just the only ones that were willing to do that kind of thing in the environment for that store or whatever.
Exactly. I mean, I think that there's a lot of these things that we're talking about, and I have to go back to the microclimates or the cultures or whatnot. Like, it's just not the same everywhere, right? And so being able to account for the context that goes into the environment is crucially important, in my opinion. Yeah.
That might also be why I don't have too much experience with this, because I've only experienced my local area. I haven't really been able to step outside of like the interior of British Columbia to actually play in tournaments. So I'm not really too sure if there's like a difference in culture. I haven't experienced it, so I'm not sure how I would deal with it or if that would like make me feel excluded. Have you guys ever experienced like that? Like, do you ever walk into, because I know a few of you have traveled a bit for events and stuff. Have you ever like gone into a different area of the country and just been like, whoa, this is so different?
A couple of times. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. To where you walk in, you're like, okay, you know, not sure what to expect here, but I will say that, you know, at the same time, every time you go into that situation, most people are there for the exact same reason, the same thing we talk about anytime we're talking about the UR, to have a good time, and the organizer wants you to have a good time. But how they try to get to that endpoint, maybe not what you're used to.
Yeah. Yeah.
In that case, do you like when in Rome, like you as the outsider coming in, do you try to like blend in, or do you try to like take your personal experiences from your local game group and try to like influence their culture? Like, how would you deal with that?
So there's been a couple of places I've gone sometimes where the interpretations have been widely different, right? And I think that it's always interesting when you find yourself in those positions. Personally, I think that it's better to, you don't necessarily have to go win in Rome to certain extents. You know, I mean, sometimes the interpretation can be pretty clear. Other times, you know, it's also, I think, very important to realize, is this the hill worth dying on, right?
Yeah.
And where is the value of what you're trying to do? Were you there to have a good time, or were you there to browbeat people over, you know, interpretations and English grammar? And I just don't think that that's the case for most cases of wargaming. And so it's always, I think, a kind of a litmus test scenario, especially in different scenarios. If you're in a local environment, as in you're playing like an RTT or something, you just got to really be careful with how you approach that, because that is more of an informal comfort area for some. I think it's good to not go into certain environments and say, well, this is how the ITC ruled it, or this is how it was done at the open, or whatever. I think in a lot of cases, it's better to realize how they do it and to just roll with it, be adaptable, be flexible, and understand where it's appropriate to push versus where it's better to pull. I know that sounds kind of cryptic, but I think when it comes to engaging with people and understanding your environment, I think there's a lot of value to that.
I can respect that. One of the things that I do in this situation is read the published information.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been plenty of times.
I don't know what this published information is, but I've never heard of it.
Well, just in case, you know, this is news to you or whatever, I try to read as much, especially when I'm traveling somewhere, because there's a time component, there's an investment component to the travel, and you know, I want to have a good time when I'm there, so I try to educate myself on kind of what to expect and ask questions in advance, if I can anticipate the questions, or I feel like something is not clear in those published things, I try to ask in advance of going, so by the time I get there, I am just like a local.
You know? That's good. Yeah. I think that leaning forward a little bit like that and being able to understand where they're coming from, even if it takes you maybe checking in with a TO a little bit, I think that goes a long way with a lot of the folks if you're finding yourself in that kind of environment.
So this is the thing I struggle with sometimes, because a lot of the TOs is, I don't know. I've been around a little while. I know most of the TOs. I try and maintain good relationships with TOs. And when I'm confused by a ruling, I don't know when to draw the line with seeking clarity and treating them like a friend. You know, seeking clarity from an official, as in like, why did you make that that decision with that ruling, rather than being like, mate, come on, you know that's not right, that kind of stuff.
Well, why
right?
can't it be both? Like, at the table, or are you talking about leading up to the event?
Either. At the table, I think it's where I don't want to do the mate stuff, because I don't think that's fair on them. And yet I tell you that I have done that before. You know, I'm pretty imperfect in some regards.
I like that you are our example case in a lot of these situations. I'm kidding, of course.
I don't know why it's a reoccurring element, but you know, I'm going to lean into it. I have a couple of good examples regarding this kind of stuff. So it was 2016 or 2017. I was playing fantasy. I went to Canberra for CanCon, which is like our big LVO-esque thing, but you know, we didn't really care about LVO at the time. Might even be 2015. And I was playing Warhammer Fantasy. It was kind of the last couple of years of Fantasy. And so it was like a 140-ish person event. So it was pretty big. And about 2/3 of the tables had paper terrain on them. And there was a picture with a word written on it. And, you know, it would be a picture of a forest with forest written on it. And this is what was confusing about this. First and foremost, this was the first time I'd ever traveled for an event. Literally the first time ever in my life I'd ever traveled for an event. And I traveled, you know, through outside of my state for an 8-game, 3-day slobber knocker in the middle of Australian summer. And a place where I didn't know anybody. I knew no one at all. Except for two other people that were playing a different game system to me. I was with two guys who were playing Infinity, and I was staying with one of them. And a funny story, even the last night there, I was so broke, because I was a broke student at the time, that I slept at a bus shelter because I couldn't afford accommodation. So I slept at a bus shelter before catching my bus to head home the next day. But, you know, it's a story for another day. The things we do to go to tournaments, guys, they say I'm not committed. Yep. So there was a picture of a watchtower. You guys remember the old fantasy watchtower? Awesome, awesome piece of terrain. multi-level, modular, whatever. Except it was a picture of a watchtower, but it had forest written on it. Now, initially, when we talked over the terrain, we realized it was a watchtower with forest written on it. And said, "Oh yeah, that's a forest, not a watchtower." And then we proceeded to play it like a watchtower through the entire game.
I mean, to be fair, it was a picture of a watchtower.
Exactly right. I'm pretty new. This guy's pretty new. We recognize it as a forest and then play it as a watchtower. And I won the game pretty much because it was a watchtower. And I felt horrific afterwards and went up to the TO and had a go at them because why would they write forest on a watchtower? And my opponent, because we caught it like in the last kind of turn and a half of the game, I looked at it and I'm like, "Oh, Jesus, I'm so sorry, man. This thing's got a forest written on it. I've been playing it like it's a building, hopping units in and out of it, being cheeky." And I said, "Okay, do you want to start over? We've got plenty of time. You know, we'll start over, go for it." And the guy didn't care. The guy, we were like, "This is like game six." And he's like, "Whatever, man. The scores is what it is." So we played it for like a forest for the rest of the game, I think for the last two turns. And, you know, didn't end up having a huge impact, but I felt horrible. Of course I did. And so I went to the TO afterwards and I'm like, "What the hell, man? Why would you not just get another picture of a forest? Why would you write forest on a watchtower?" And then proceeded to blow up about the fact that they had paper terrain. But so, yeah, this was a thing that I did. You know, there was nothing in the players pack. There was nothing saying, you know, things were going to be listed incorrectly. There's nothing in there saying it was paper terrain or any of that stuff. And look, I realized that TO was doing the best they could with what they had.
In retrospect.
You know, having been a TO myself, I feel horrible for a lot of things about that event now. Don't regret sleeping at the bus station, though. But yeah, it is an interesting thing to come out it was. And so I felt bad coming back from that event, by the way. I didn't feel great about that event. That was the first time I traveled interstate for it. And yeah, I had that one game, which steamrolled, and I didn't have a lot of resilience at the time because I was a poor student and not doing that well in life. And I played very poorly for the rest of the event. It kind of threw me off. And I made reparations. That's exactly right. I made reparations to all parties involved over time. Apologies were sent out and, fences mended. But yeah, it's interesting that kind of a one poor experience. That could be the thing that turns somebody off attending, and the management of those things and how fairly we treat each other in those interactions is really something that I think more people need to consider. Because you see it on the internet a lot more than you see it in person, but the internet is the internet.
Well, a few things there. If I could, I'm going to continue to tie back to an example here, is that if they had published that information of, you know, this is the terrain, this is part of the terrain, you know, be expected to do this or know this, you might have already filled it in your head like, okay, cool, I'm accepting that, I'm going with it. So when we see it, it's not going to bother me, it's not going to be a shock. Or you might have said, "I'm going to stay home." And both, you know, that those are fine outcomes for yourself. But the person that put that event together probably questioned themselves the same thing. Like, "Oh, I should have said it. Or was it the right thing to say it? Oh, I've potentially upset my friends." You know, they got all those same decisions and feelings probably that you do on the other side of it.
Yeah, I mean, that is fair to say. They're like, you know, no TO wants to, like you said before, give a shoddy experience, especially when you consider that most TOs are trying to cater for their friends themselves. You know, we don't have a professional TO cohort or anything. But yeah, I've got my. I love that I keep coming up as examples in this, and I love that I can afford that hopefully to people as a learning experience.
I was trying to think of some example about myself. I just couldn't.
fair enough. But you know, I don't mind. I've had a rocky life, and you know, therefore my experiences in the game have been pretty
polished.
Yeah. I know, it's fine. I think that's
really important though. When you consider that, like, you know, you wish that was never the case, of course, and you wish that there were better ways that we could learn about it. But sometimes people in general, not just you, Adam, have to learn through our mistakes. And sometimes it's, you know, like you say, it's good when we've got an environment where we can actually learn from those mistakes and still keep coming back. Right. And so.
Well, exactly right. And, you know, I'll put it out there right now, and hopefully a lot of people can relate to this. I learn very little from my, if I'm automatically good at something, I'm not that interested in it. If I have to struggle to learn, if I have to make mistakes and butter up and use my resilience, I'll enjoy something a lot more, be a lot more worthwhile. And I learn so much more from my mistakes, and I've made a lot of them. So there is that.
Yeah. Sometimes we don't know exactly what to do, but we can learn it through knowing and experiencing what not to do.
Well, this is the thing about the maturity of the scene, which we kind of keep coming back to. Hopefully we're at a state where people don't need to make these things. They can look at things like the code of conduct. They can, which didn't exist, by the way. There was no real, apart from some events that I used to go to that had like a sportsmanship rubric, which told you, you know, how you were going to be rewarded for being a good boy at the table. Yay. You know, there wasn't really any reason to give a good game, to be an enjoyable person, apart from being a good person yourself. And it's really good that there was nothing really governing the conduct that was there. And I will say these are the expectations. These are the minimum standards of how to conduct yourself in a sportsmanlike or gentlewoman-like manner. And I'm happy that the scene is at a point here where new players can come in and see what the expectation is, see how they should treat each other. Because I, you know, to some extent, I treated when I first came in, I played a lot of basketball at a high level, played a lot of football at a pretty, at a decent level. You know, I'd punch on most games. You know, there'd be a scuff most games, especially in Australian rules football. So, you know, to some extent, I came in with a similar mentality. Like, this was an intense thing that I was passionate about. And it brought out the same emotions for me as a competitive sport until I matured as a person. And I'm happy to say that hopefully people coming into the game now don't have to know what's expected of them beforehand. They can see, oh, okay, this way that I acted was out of order. And I can learn from that.
I do like that there is some, and we'll take a break after this, but I do like how there's some ingrained in our hobby that we are by and large, everyone's a good sport, or at least well intending in their sportsmanship. Mm. And by and large, we do want to bring our best models or our best effort for our models to the table. And that is 99, with no exaggeration, percent the case of everyone I've encountered in this hobby.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a different friend of you guys, but I've yet to meet somebody who I think has come in with the intention of giving somebody a bad game, like, or being a poor sport or a bad interaction for an opponent.
And even if they start out in the hobby or whatever, thinking, look, they've only ever played games against their one other buddy in their gaming, in their house, and that's how they do it. But I think they quickly adapt to like this overall this globe spanning culture for stuff like we're talking about. Like, none of it, I don't know if people, I mean, people can probably tell with certain accents, especially Tanya's, that we're not all from the same place. But yeah, yeah. We have a lot of commonalities in how we approach the hobby. And that's true across all tables, literally. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll keep on this topic. Thanks for listening. And I will see you in just a few seconds.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back, and I hope everyone got to exhale during the word from our sponsor. I know we're talking about some weighty stuff, and I don't mean to put all this, because ultimately I know that the people that will actually run events is smaller than those that will play in events. And really what I'd like to do is, of course, you know, bring some time-tested strategies that have equated into some successful events, but also give conversation. You know, if you are someone that attends these things, or your buddy is the one that always runs them, you know, maybe bounce some of these ideas off of them, you know, in a constructive way if you're looking to change things up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your TO is generally a community member, probably somebody who's very accessible in a lot of different ways. I mean, of course, like, if you're talking about TO stuff and they've got a TO page or an event page, don't PM them privately for questions. But, you know, they want to run things as fairly as possible as well, and, you know, get involved.
I personally feel like every sort of like subculture space that you belong to will be better if every single person takes ownership of that space.
That's a good point.
Right? So like, if you see something that you think is a problem, don't ignore it and don't just leave it for somebody else. Like, think about it, approach it, like, talk to other people within the group about how you could constructively handle it, and like, take ownership of it. I think a lot of times people don't feel like maybe they just feel like they're a person that's on the periphery, right? They're not somebody who's like in it. But if you take part in our hobby in a local area, you are part of the group. You definitely can own your space, and you definitely can have a say.
Get that dialogue going. You know, right. you may change your mind once you hear someone's experience with what you're doing, or it may even further galvanize you. Like, no, I get it that, you know, you don't feel the same way I do, but I feel strongly about this. So, you know, I'm going to start my own tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, and league, I mean, I say this as a newer player as well, but like, like, I don't know, maybe it's just the way that I'm built, but I just always feel like, even though I'm new in my local group, like I still have ideas that could make things better. And I know at some point in the future, I will probably run events because, you know, like that's, I'm just an organized administrator and that's what I do. And yeah, I've just always since day one felt like, not only is it like my right to take ownership of my space, but it's kind of my responsibility to the group to also make sure that I'm voicing my opinions.
And when you do run events, you know, make a little something, maybe like a packet or something. I don't know, people might read it.
Read the rule pack.
Again, I don't want to set any like false expectations that you will not get questions, you know, but you at least, you know, establish your stance on some of these things, and that will influence what shows up. Yeah,
I strongly believe that everybody should have a crack at being involved in the running or organization at some event at some point. If you want to attend an event or be a participant, have a crack at running one at some point. Even if it's just being involved in like setting up tables or helping out, everybody should be part of this.
If you don't know where to start, or ask the organizer if you can help. Hey, can I show up 30 minutes early and maybe help arrange some tables or something? The answer is probably going to be yes.
You know what else is a really cool thing that you can do for culture crafting if you are like maybe a more experienced player, is like go to the TO and be like, hey, can I run like a primer the night before for new players? Because the very first tournament that I went to, they did that and it was amazing. It made me feel so much more comfortable on the actual day of the tournament. Oh, well,
like a job orientation almost.
Yeah, like you could come in and like they were setting up the hall at the time, so like we could meet all of the organizers and volunteers there. So because it was also in the next town over, I didn't know a lot of people there at the time, and like they sort of like went through, you know got to make sure that you're there early and like this is how you're gonna set up your stuff, and they just sort of like went through like all the little things that maybe experienced players sort of take for granted. And yeah, that was just really nice. And that is something that anybody could volunteer to do, really.
That's nice. I want to talk about one thing that it can be overlooked is how players communicate their army list to people now. You know, are you going to insist that everyone print out X amount of copies of their army list and hand them to their opponent? Is electronic sharing going to be okay? Is sharing of devices and objects okay in a post-COVID environment? You know, these are the things.
I have been to game, so I have stepped away from. I always usually have one or two copies of my list printed out, especially if I'm going to a big event. But a lot of the time now, here's the thing about 9th edition. Yeah, as soon as we went to the majority of armies being single faction armies, which has been a great change for 9th edition. Mm-hmm. And then now that we can't customize our stuff pre-game, I find I don't need to ask many questions about my opponent's army. I look over and I just pretty much go, is it WYSIWYG? And then they'll go yes or no. And then if they say yes, I'll be like, oh, yep, so the Immortals are Immortals and the Scarabs are Scarabs. And yeah, cool. What are your, which relics are on who? And
they'll 17 point out which guns. Are which.
Yeah. And then I'll be like, sick. Okay, off we go. And if they want, you know, some people, it's different for different armies, of course. Like I play Marines, you know. Cool. The Inceptors are Inceptors. You know what they do. Everyone knows what they do. There's no real questions. Some people have questions about, you know, oh, what's the range on them? Is it 12, 18, or 24? And I'll tell them it's 18, of course, and et cetera, et cetera. But what I find people want most is a lot of people want to be able to refer back to my stuff during the game. And so a lot of the time now, I'll message it to them on Facebook. I'll message them my army.
Oh, nice.
And that works an absolute treat. These days it gets as long as people are comfortable with that. You mean comfortable giving out your details. You could be with an absolute stranger or somebody never met before, but hey, what a good way to make friends as well. You know, oh cool, we're all of a sudden Facebook friends, if that means anything to you. You know, same can be done over a multitude of different mediums. You can just, you know, take a screen cap of it and send it to them, you know, via text if you want.
Those are great alternatives. Yeah, I just mean is you know, like something to list there so people know what to bring on the day of.
Yeah,
it's another thing. I mean, but that's actually a great solution. You know, I started to think about like, oh my goodness, you know, it's on my tablet, it's in the app or whatever. You're right. But yeah. I haven't really even stopped to think about is that, yeah, there's the army construction is a lot more standardized now. And the rapid way that we translate information in our community, especially the folks that typically go to those kind of things, they're probably going to know what a Cognis last cannon is.
Yeah, it's almost like a lot of the things that we need to know about each other's armies are all the wonky stuff, like the cryptech upgrades and the logi and magi upgrades for admech and stuff. I need those things explained to me like two or three times a game, but you know, I generally know most of what your units do.
Well, maybe it's also in the stratagems and stuff, and that's not going to be on your army list anyway.
Exactly right. It's almost like the army lists are not defunct, but they're, you know, you don't need to know as much, which is probably good. It's probably a good thing. Certainly in 8th edition, man, I wanted your army list, you know, I wanted your list. I wanted your breakdown of your stratagems. I wanted to know how many times you'd opted to, you know, change your strats pre-game, what the options were, what they were going to change. It was just crazy trying to unpack all that stuff. I think it was a good change, even though I still don't like it, that I don't like that I have zero malleability pre-game with my relics and warlord traits and stuff. But in all likelihood, it's been good for the game. I'll have to swallow my pride and admit it.
I also like to have that functionality. And that's really what it was. Like, okay, I roll up for this game. Well, I can change this one thing on my list and give me a slightly bit more of it. It's like a sideboard of a fighting chance. But I don't want to come... We're commiserating, you know, about what we... the time's gone by, which is
do
awesome.
Do you remember the mirror matches? It was like the most important thing in a mirror match. It was the little microcosm options you'd change. You'd be like, oh, cool, it's Grey Knights versus Grey Knights. Well, I'm going to take the blah, 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 tempercopia of wacky whatever, and this other guy's going to take the tome of such and such. And all of a sudden, it completely changed the outcome of the game because it's a mirror match, and a lot of times they're a coin flip. And I used to that's the stuff where I loved it. I loved it so much. Because it's like a chess game, except one guy gets to replace a pawn with a rook, and the other guy gets to replace a pawn with a knight. And you're like, wow, different game.
Well, there is complexity and power in list design, but a lot of that complexity is shifted towards the stratagems and that kind of stuff, which would never be captured on an army list. So maybe that's it. Maybe if that requirement is a legacy holdover that might not, you know, really be a requirement anymore.
Yeah, spot on.
That's interesting to think about. I've learned something. That's a great perspective.
Sweet. But, yay.
You know, well, that's think of that. Like that bit of discourse just challenged that one thing, and then it opens up like, oh my goodness, what else are we taking for granted?
True. Yeah, that is true. I think I take a lot for granted.
Fair enough. I guess it's a topic for a different show. But this has been cool. I mean, I think that going to these things is fun. When we can, when it's safe to go to these things, what I, of course, try to go as many as possible. Speaking of going places, I'm going to be at Gen Con in Indianapolis this coming up weekend.
Ooh, oh, man. I wish I could be at Gen Con. I love Gen Con. It's such a good place. So many good things go down.
I don't know how it's going to be this year, but I know that the Games Workshop is going to be there. So I'm going to be checking out the booth and seeing what's up and what announcements and stuff they have as posted on the community site. We're going to see something, but there's also a bunch of other vendors there.
Cheeky predictions?
The silhouettes that they've got there, one of them kind of looks Templar-ish.
Yeah, well, that's, you know. Not much of something we haven't seen yet. Although, man, I am keen. I'm very keen. Oh, do you know that Templar's model, the new black, the new Emperor's Champion?
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting. They've managed to make that guy look plain and busy at the same time. I'm not sure if I've said that on this show before, but I find it pretty fun.
I like that there seems to be an homage, you know, to the second model, the second Emperor's Champion model.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do love that. Yeah, I do love how they always have a bit of a callback there. I'm going to go out on a limb and say we're going to hear announced the next couple of 40K codexes that are coming after Black Templars. Templars are about to come out in October. Orcs in September, Templars in October. I'm assuming we're going to get the other Octarius-esque releases, and that might be, fingers crossed, please, please, please be Garden Nids being the next codexes.
No, we'll see. I'm anxious to hear, of course, what they say, because, you know, I'm fiend for that stuff. But I also want to walk around and look at all the other, like, board. What I try to do when I go to Gen Con is come away with almost like a very travel-friendly board game. Something that's both light on rules, but has complexity and strategy, and I can fit in a suitcase and take places whenever I go.
Cool.
That's my mission. I don't always find something, but most of the time you can. There's hundreds of vendors, and some of them have brand new games. Some of them, you know, are showcasing things that are going to come out later, but a lot of them have things you can buy right there on the spot.
Do you like cooperative games?
I do. Yep. I like, so what I've been playing recently are games that they're not necessarily cooperative, but they're not overly combative.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can kind of play your own game and not seem like you're being ruthless and cutthroat, you know, with the rest of the table.
I bought a game and I've been really enjoying it. And it's the Princess Bride board game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's got miniatures in it too, so that's pretty cool. But like the mechanics of that game are very, very cool, because it's like you're trying to tell the story. So you're like, players are working together to tell the story, and it's fabulous.
Each one of the scenarios is a scene or a chapter from the movie.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to like work together and like get the assets that you need to complete the story. It's just, it's fabulous. And the miniatures are actually not that bad.
How long does it take to play a scenario?
15 minutes for like the one chapter.
That's right? Pretty cool.
It's really cool. Highly recommend.
I do have it, but we haven't played it yet. What'd you say, Adam?
I have started my yearly rewatching of Firefly.
Yeah.
every year, pretty much. On the dot, around September-ish, I just start watching Firefly again. It's like in the seasons. Spring has begun.
Have you played the Firefly board game?
I purchased it for my brother, and apparently it's extremely involved. I purchased it for my brother for his birthday. We never played it. We just never played it. It's sitting on a shelf, and that's what came up. That's why it came up, and that's how I got to Firefly.
It's not as involved as you. I should say. So there's lots of pieces in the board. You know, takes up a decent amount of space, but it's not complicated.
Awesome. Yeah. So we're all in lockdown still here for another 2 weeks. But you know, I want to spend a lot of time with my family when we get out. What a better time? Maybe we'll do D&D. Maybe we'll do Firefly board game. I'll suggest it.
I haven't tried like all the expansions and stuff for it, but I've played the base board game several times. I enjoy it, and it's not complicated.
Fantastic.
Okay, so it's not hard to learn. It may be one of those things that's hard. I'm not claiming to be good at it, but it wasn't hard to learn. a game that I got the last Gen Con, of course, not you know the one when we could go to those types of things, was called Dragoon, where you take on the role of dragons and you're burning and eating villages that are invading your land.
Get to be Trogdor?
I was about to say, you better name your guy Trogdor.
Yeah, well, so...
this is one big beefy arm.
For some reason, one of the dragons looks like butter. Looks like a stick of butter. It's the same color. It doesn't look like butter. It looks like dragon, but it's the same color as butter. So we called that the butter dragon, and then called the rest of the dragons other dairy names.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So but, you had creamer, you had ice cream, you had milky, what?
We got blue cheese, we got the baby bell, we got the butter dragon.
Oh.
Yeah, I forget the next one, but
that was everything I'd hoped it would be.
You get where I'm going. But it's you're on a grid and where everyone seems like where it's the cooperative bit is that you're rolling to see where these villages and villagers or you know, basically villages and towns pop up. And there's a couple of other elements that are, it's like part Catan, part cooperative type game. But you're also scoring points, trying to score points. And you're sometimes you involve stealing points, stealing gold, whatever from your opponent. But you're playing this all almost like on a 1 foot by 1 foot board. It's a cloth board. It like rolls up. You know, it's Ooh. Takes up no space to store and has all these kind of cool little interactions. And that's what those are the types of games I look for in those kind of situations. You can break them out and play with anybody almost at any time. So I hope find something like that.
Well, if you've not played Boss Monster, make sure you get Boss Monster.
Yeah, I don't own that, but I've played it in the past.
It's so good.
Yeah, it seems like a solid game.
Yeah.
Overboss, there's like the next game that they made.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a Settlers of Catan Boss Monster deal. Really fun.
Oh, I have all the expansions for Boss Monsters, and I'm going to have to get Overboss. If you endorse it,
it's fun. It's lots of fun. Same kind of like 8-bit art style. Very good.
Love that.
Like that retro. Yeah, well, that's where I'm going to be over the weekend at Gen Con. I'll, of course, be swinging by the Games Workshop booth and taking some pictures and posting them on my Twitter at warmaster_TPM or on Instagram at Fights with Dice. So check it out there if you're curious about seeing what I see over the weekend.
I'm going to follow.
Nice.
Live vicariously through your tweets.
I do love going around and just like checking out the games, you know, as being just a giant nerd at heart. It's kind of nice. It's weird though. Gen Con like shuts down at night. There's no scene. It's so weird. But I'll report next week about how it was.
Excellent. I can't wait.
Anybody else got anything they want to talk about? I know this is one of those things that's kind of a heavy topic, but I've really enjoyed talking about it with y'all.
It's been nice. It's been nice being back. I've enjoyed talking with everybody again. I got to say, I'm really excited. I haven't had much of a chance to cover it or anything, but I am headed to the, as envious as I am, Paul, of you going to Gen Con, I am headed with the U.S. Army esports team to the Las Vegas team tournament.
Oh,
baby.
That's not this weekend, but next weekend, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Have you submitted this yet?
Not yet. Not yet.
Damn, okay, 17th. I won't ask you what you're taking yet then.
Okay. I'm excited to talk about it. It's really cool. We're actually sending two teams. It's pretty awesome. I'm really excited.
Well, we got to hear about it. So next week, let's talk about what the lead up is, because it won't be published until the day of.
Yeah, that'll be
good. So let's talk about your strategy leading up to it, because I love the strategy that goes into team events. I absolutely love it.
Me too.
I love to see how y'all approached it.
So exciting for me.
There you go. There's a cliffhanger for next week. Everybody tune back in. Yeah.
Everybody tune in for Adam exposing himself in another new and wonderful way.
No.
No, I mean, you know, being vulnerable.
Jeez. Oh, okay. Okay.
Hey, man, we're here for you. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. I don't think I could say so much about my silly past without being so wonderfully supported. So thank you very much, everybody.
We'll see y'all next week.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!